ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true.
Dateline, Columbia, South Carolina. On Sunday, February 11th, a man began banging on the door of an apartment in Columbia where a woman lived with her two children. The man made forcible entry and the resident asked him to identify himself as she retrieved her gun from her purse. She said the man continued to approach her and she shot him. Police declared the intruder DRT, or dead, right there. Deputies questioned the victim at their headquarters and released her shortly afterward as they had determined that she had acted in self-defense. The woman's two children were not harmed, and no charges are being filed. This has been the Defensive Gun Use, or DGU, Files.
The story you have just heard was true.
Years ago, this nation was conceived in liberty by a document that is still quoted today around the world. Come join the listeners of this station to gather in front of the Udall Park Rec Center at 8:30 a.m. July 4th for a 9 o'clock public reading of the Declaration of Independence. That's 8:30 a.m. Thursday, July 4th, in front of the Udall Park Rec Center, 7200 East Tankaverde Road.
America Armed and Free is a paid program on KVOI, wholly owned by Charles Heller, produced, engineered, paid for, and hosted by him. Any opinions are his, not necessarily the station's.
I, Harry S. Truman, President of the United States, dedicate this day of Sunday to America Armed and Free.
The Constitution does not say that government shall decree the right to keep and bear arms. The Constitution says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America, Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
Indeed, we are the guardians of America Armed and Free, both in uniform, as my guest has been, and myself, who has not, unless you count ROTC or Boy Scouts, and Weblos and all the other stuff, in Order of the Arrow. And Chris is a veteran of the Air Force, and he is on the school board of Vail School District, and I believe he is a Vail substitute teacher. Is that correct?
No. I'm a substitute teacher outside of the district.
Outside of the district.
Statutorily, you can't be on a board and be a teacher or a substitute within the district.
For the fifth time today, I stand corrected. Okay. This is Get It Wrong Day for Charles.
It's all right. It's good to be here with you, Charles.
It's really good to have you in studio. This is the first time you've been on my program in studio.
It is.
And so this is wonderful. And worry more about the microphone than looking at me. That's good. Thank you. And bring it up just a hair up. There you go. That's good. Oh, that's much better. All right. So you're involved in a lawsuit. Yeah, feel free to fiddle with it. Are you going to turn it up? I've never seen anybody do that. I don't know that that's going to work. That's okay.
Get it going.
You may need an anchor. Yeah. Listen, I got to tell you, this is the first guest I have ever seen in studio who not only has his combat tactical water bottle, but on the front pouch, on the front panel of the water bottle casing, it has a pouch with a constitution in it. You have your combat tactical constitution copy and Declaration of Independence copy, and a real number two pencil. Or is that a 2.5?
These are both number two pencils.
Number twos.
Yes.
I could tell that from 15 feet away.
Yes.
This is wonderful. This is what I call the Leatherman culture.
It is.
The culture of doing it yourself, carrying self-sufficiency tools with you that, you know, are sufficient unto having a successful day. You're involved in a lawsuit against Pima County as the plaintiff. What is it that Pima County did that it didn't have the authority to do?
You mean stepping into the God-given rights of gun owners to not be victimized?
Yes.
hopefully that answered the question fairly shortly, succinctly.
Mm-hmm.
But Pima County, in their infinite unwisdom and a 4-1 vote, passed an ordinance to re-victimize lawful gun owners who've had guns stolen if they don't report that firearm stolen within 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I take personal offense to this because shortly after my wife and I were married, I was going out to New Jersey to pick her up after her deployment because both of us were active duty at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was out there, my apartment was robbed and I had a firearm stolen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know at the time that my firearm was stolen. It was over 48 hours from the time it was stolen before it was reported. Therefore, not only was I going to be victimized by the criminal who stole all my stuff,
mm-hmm.
I was going to be turned around and victimized by the state.
No, by the county.
Well, but the state being the big right. state, the county,
yeah.
the government.
The government.
The government. I was going to be re-victimized by the government by taking away something that they have no right to take, my money.
Mm-hmm. And to be clear, and just for clarification, because mm-hmm. I helped get part of it passed, which is ARS 133108, which mm-hmm. is the state preemption law, and it's specifically paragraph D, and it says that a municipality, a political subdivision of the state, a county, a city, a board, a district, an authority, can pass a regulation about firearms, but it can't in its effect have a stronger penalty than state law.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing as there's no penalty in state law for failure to report a firearm, Pima County is exceeding its authority under the color of law to do that, and that's what you're suing them over.
Correct.
Yeah. Wow. Gee, it really sounds like they stepped in it pretty hard. And
mm-hmm.
The people representing you are the Goldwater Scharf Norton Center for Constitutional Litigation, and their name tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
I got to imagine that anybody in Pima County, the council for Pima County, when they hear from Goldwater, they got to wish they had worn their Depends to work that day.
Absolutely. As I say, Goldwater has a pretty strong track record here in Pima County, even with the city of Tucson, and even more so when it comes to firearms litigation. Goldwater's been very successful, and when they reached out to me and asked if I would be the plaintiff on this, I couldn't help but agree, because again, having been victimized by the criminal element and turn around and being re-victimized by the government, it's kind of a double whammy.
It's government being master, not servant.
Exactly.
And if you listen to the open of both programs, it's kind of that's kind of violating the oath. And it strikes me, you know, when you look at the purpose, stated purpose of government for Arizona, that all, and I know you know this, but it's all powers inherent in the, all powers inherent in the, yeah, yeah, he's got his AZCDL t-shirt on. It's very impressive the way you wear it. But it's, that all powers inherent in the people, and that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed, and that the purpose of government is to protect those liberties that are inherent in the people. And if you look at what Pima County did or is attempting to do in the name of some good, is use some problem or emergency, the theft of a firearm, as an excuse for a regulation that somehow it'll make some people somewhat more safe. And how does that sit with you?
See, my issue with this is it turns law-abiding citizens into criminals for not actually reporting the loss of a firearm. You already have the criminal who's already committed the crime, the person who's already committed the crime. They've stolen a firearm, which is a state and federal offense. And then you're going to turn around and you're going to create a criminal, or, you know, you're going to have a civil citation for somebody who doesn't even know something's actually transpired.
Right. At one point, I lent a gun to somebody, and he never did give it back. At what point does that become reportable?
Yeah, exactly. Well, as I say, you go out hunting with your kid, right? And you leave your gun with your, you know, your adult son, right? And it may not come back for a while. Again, it's to your point, when does that become reportable?
Yeah, when is it? Well, I guess suppose at the instant you consider it to be a theft.
Mm-hmm.
But when do you? But if you consider it to be a theft, I lent that gun to the fellow more than 5 years ago. At what point did that become reportable? And the government's idea of when it became reportable, they might say, well, 48 hours after you gave it to him. But I didn't give it to him to get it back in 48 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I never really specified and it never really came back.
I loaned one of my hunting rifles to a friend of mine so he could go hunting, and he brought it back 2 weeks later. So,
well, yeah, but if that was the agreed upon time, it's not a theft.
Right.
But if he brought it back 3 years later, at some point did it become a theft? And it says the statute actually says misplaced or was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, from time to time, I take a gun out of the safe and I'll put it in some other part of the house, or I'll put it on the kitchen table and then put something on top of it and forget it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've misplaced it. I look in the safe and I go, where the blank did I put that gun? And I don't remember that it's laying on a table under a stack of stuff. Does that become reportable?
Well, and see, then here's the follow-up question. Does it become an Easter egg hunt in your own house?
Well, more like a hunt for the Afikoman. The Jewish folks are laughing. So, but anyway, it's the piece. For those of you who don't know, it's a piece of matzah they break off and hide. And when a kid finds it, they give them $10. Or with inflation, it might be $100 now. I don't know
exactly.
Yeah. I think it was $5 when I was a kid, but which was a lot of money then.
Yeah.
Filled a gas tank. Let me think.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
Right before I joined the military, mm-hmm. You know, when gas was 68 cents a gallon.
Yeah, well, I remember when my mom pulled over suddenly to get gasoline, and it was normally $23.9, and they had it at Shell Station for $17.9.
Oh, wow.
And she pulled over the Rambler, the 59 Rambler, to fill up the gas tank. So,
yeah.
And they came out and gassed it up for you. There was no self-service, and not in Illinois in those days.
Dang.
What did you do in the Air Force?
So my job in the Air Force was explosive ordnance disposal technician. I was effectively the military's version of the bomb squad.
And how do you learn to do that?
So at the time, we went to Eglin Air Force Base in Florida.
Yeah.
And then we did the first phase there, and then we went from there. After that first phase, we went to Indian Head Naval Surface Warfare Center, about 30 miles south of Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
And that taught us everything from simple explosives, you know, chemical mixtures and everything else, the mechanics of internal fuses and fuse functioning, hand grenades all the way up to nuclear weapons, and really? Everything in between.
Wow. When you defuse a hand grenade, what do you do with it?
It depends on the type of hand grenade you have, right? Because there's several types. There's smoke grenades. There's riot control grenades. There's actual high explosive hand grenades.
Fragmentation,
so, right.
Stuff like that.
So, and again, it'll depend.
Can you just, this is a stupid question. I get at least one or two an hour. Can you actually unscrew the fuse from a hand grenade?
Yes.
You can?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I've seen that in the movies. And, of course, I have no experience, nor do I wish any experience with hand grenades. It's just not one of the things I seek after. But it's just, I've always wondered, you can actually just unscrew it.
Mm-hmm.
And that does denature it?
It depends on, again, it depends on the hand grenade. So there's always...
And don't try this at home.
Yeah, there's various procedures and everything else, which goes into tradecrafts, which I won't actually discuss.
Right, yeah.
So, but yeah, there's various procedures. Mm. And yes, you can unscrew the fuse on a hand grenade.
Have you ever wanted to work in explosive ordnance detail on the civilian side? Have you ever wanted to or done it?
Actually, I wanted to. I wanted to, right before I retired from the military, I had applied with Tucson Police Department.
Uh-huh.
As well as Customs and Border Protection.
Mm-hmm.
And was actually going through the process and ended up with another job opportunity to go work as a government contract instructor, which I didn't have to worry about putting my life on the line. And I got to go, you know, Monday through Friday from, you know, 8 a.m. till 5 p.m., and that was our day. So I didn't have to worry about overtime unless, you know, I actually chose it.
So you were teaching people EOD stuff?
I was actually teaching people investigations.
Oh.
Forensic investigations.
Oh, interesting.
So it was a lot of fun.
It strikes me that although it's a somewhat discredited organization, but one part of what BATFE does in terms of forensic investigation is pretty credible.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one part of the BATFE that actually does make some sense.
Mm-hmm.
You would have done good at that.
Actually, I have a lot of friends who are within that organization to this day.
Oh, good. All right, stand by in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios with Chris King, talking about explosive ordnance disposal and also litigation.
This is Herman Cain, and if it has a muzzle, a nozzle, or a blade, you'll find your topic on America Armed and Free. Sundays, right after Liberty Watch.
Swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Don Wells, is there anything you missed on the island?
Oh, well, actually, what I really missed, there we were with nothing to do. What I missed most was the Swap Shop. I mean, what fun we'd have had. I don't know how we'd have gotten a hold of you, but we'd have tried.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
Local news and talk.
I'm playing this over.
I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
That is the great Steve Lee from Australia. I had him on, and back under previous ownership during the interview, I was able to crack off a .40 caliber round into the sand bucket here, and I actually recorded it when I did that, and it's not working. Look at that. It is not playing. Okay, that's interesting. So maybe I should fix something. Oh, maybe I should turn on the button and see if it works then. Yep, that's it. That was 40 in the bucket. So,
I heard stories about that.
Yeah, well, that was a different one under Wake Up Tucson that it happened in. That was different. It was not in my own. I didn't drag the. Yeah, I did drag the bucket into their studio, but anyway, another not the best moment in radio.
How many radio hosts can actually say they've done that?
Yeah, that's true. Very few, and done it with peaceably and nicely. We got a caller. Caller, your first name, please.
Rick.
Rick, you're on the radio.
So, I have a couple points. One, though, DeSimone asked what restaurant you eat or what three restaurants you eat at. I would like to know what kind of multi-tool Chris utilizes and if he has a folding pocket knife.
Oh, that's just the best question.
So, currently, the pocket knife I'm carrying is an OTF by Ridgecrest.
Uh-huh.
Ravencrest, and yes, I do have a multi-tool. It's a...
Wait, just hold it up. Let me see.
So
that is a... Oh, that's a Leatherman Raptor.
Yes.
Oh, but that's one of the newer Raptors.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a medical shears that also has an oxygen tube wrench and a seatbelt cutter on it. Oh, what a cool multi-tool.
Yes.
Mine is laying on my desk at home to put back in my EDC bag because I pulled it out and used it. Forgot to put it back in. Does that answer your first question?
It does. It makes me feel kind of self-conscious. I'm living in the past. I'm carrying a wave.
So I have several multi-tools. I actually have a wave. I have several Gerbers. One of them is the one I usually carry is the Mutt.
Oh, yeah. The Mutt, my Mutt I keep in my gun cleaning kit.
Mm-hmm. So I've got a couple of them, so they keep them all over the place.
I will tell you, the one I'm rocking right, if you're asking me as well as Chris, the one I'm rocking right now is the, it's a Chinese knockoff, sorry, but it is a Chinese P2 clone, and a clone of the Leatherman, and it is called the SQT7. And the SQT is a, it has on it for the knife blade, for one of the knife blades, it has the same knife blade as the Leatherman, the one with the orange handles. Can't think of the name of it. The titanium one also. But it's got this blade with a hook blade in the top. And caller, hold on, we'll be right with you. And it's got a hook blade in it, so you can cut like,
seatbelt cutter.
A seatbelt cutter or a
nylon webbing.
Yeah, nylon webbing. But what I use it most for is zip ties. Because I use a lot of zip ties in things I do. And I love it for cutting that. And the other thing about it is it's got an extremely competent scissors on the outside. Look at the size of that thing.
Those are solid.
Yeah, those are solid. And these are very good cutting. I got thick fingernails, and I like to trim my fingernails with them.
The first multi-tool I had with this pair of scissors was actually Swiss Army.
Right. Yeah.
Not an actual Swiss Army knife, but an actual Swiss Army multi-tool that came out in the late 90s. Fabulous. I still use it today. It was one of the first ones. Mm-hmm. They came out shortly after the Leatherman did.
Right.
And yes, the difference between them and the Leatherman was the Leatherman had sharp edges on the outside of the handle, so it made gripping things really hard on the hands, where the Swiss Army was actually curved and made it easier to grab things with.
Right. And it's... some of the tools are really, really good. The steels on their knives are kind of soft, and they're easy to sharpen, but they don't hold their edge that long. The Leatherman Arc has got that new type of blade, Magna Cut steel on it, and it's just incredible. If you want a steel that is still hold its edge kind of forever and also won't rust, I mean, you can swim with a Magna Cut blade and it won't rust. Okay, Rick, other questions?
So, Rick, real quick. Charles did actually refer to my water bottle. I kindly refer to it as my assault bottle because it could be used.
Yeah, it's a 32. No, it's bigger than 32.
It's a 2-liter water bottle.
So 64 ounce.
Yep.
More or less.
And it's steel, and it's by Iron Infidel.
And it's got a sleeve on the outside for his phone and a copy of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like maybe a multi-tool, and there's a pouch on the front for I don't know what. Maybe
for a wallet.
Oh, for your wallet? Yeah. Oh, so that's kind of your man purse.
Yeah, it could be, except my wallet's in my pocket.
Uh-huh. And it's got your Combat Technical rubber chicken on
it
the front
does.
As well, so it's kind of handy. All right, Rick, and a second question?
So when you talk about... passing ordinances, and I don't think people don't stop and think about it every day, how more and more laws are passed all the time. Last year, if I recall correctly, California passed over 1,000 new laws, or they put it, I don't know what the governor signed, but that's what the legislators put forward, was over 1,000 new laws. Pima County has this huge stack of regulations, right? And you can get fined if you violate one of their regulations. Mm-hmm. I parked a commercial vehicle in front of my house. For a week, a neighbor called the county, and they came out and were going to issue me a fine. I had no idea I could not park a commercial vehicle in a residential area.
Mm.
So anyways, so all these regulations ties into what Ayn Rand said years ago. She said that the only way a government can really control the citizen is by making him a criminal. I'm shortening it up. If we pass enough laws, every man will be a criminal. And this is an example of the city council saying, hey, if you don't report a weapon that maybe you misplaced it and you can't find it, we're going to give you a fine, or we're going to otherwise impact your life.
Board of Supervisors, not City Council, but the point is the same.
Board of Supervisors.
Right,
okay.
But the point is the same.
Yes, effectively.
Yeah, so, how can you know? And ignorance of the law is no excuse. How high is the stack of U.S. code titles for federal law and federal regulations that you can violate if you own a business? And suffer penalties.
It was interesting. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and the Federal Register now is over 120,000 pages. So those are opportunities for the federal government to come in and just apply the whole of government to your person and your liberties. And it, you know, under the Trump administration, that the Federal Register was, you know, knocked down to between 60 and 66,000 pages. So
still 66,000 opportunities for a lawyer.
Exactly. And that doesn't even get into what they apply at the state or your local municipality level.
What I get a kick out of is the very notion that there's some new gun law that's going to change anything as far as public safety or crime. I mean, there are multiple layers of laws from the federal, state, and local level. And it's also kind of laughable to think that a person who I got interviewed by Arizona Family, and they said, do you think we ought to have a bump stock ban? It's like, that question is based on the notion that a person who's willing to commit a mass murder would obey a bump stock law. Do you understand how fundamentally unwise that question is? Somehow that answer never got on the air. Just oops.
Yeah.
So, Chris, great call. You there? I mean,
Rick,
excuse me. I did it again.
I'm on this side of the table. Rick's on the phone.
Yeah, shut up, Charles. And I called Janet Wittenbrig or Kathleen Witten. Oh, my God. I'm sorry, both of you. All right. Well, I'll tell you, there's one graceful way to get out of this, and that is with going to break. And so maybe if I can get the break to play. Let's see. There we go. That's playing now. All right. Stand by.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Don Wells.
Is there anything you missed on the island?
Oh, well, actually, what I really missed. There we were with nothing to do. What I missed most was the Swap Shop. I mean, what fun we'd have had. I don't know how we'd have gotten a hold of you, but we'd have tried.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns.
Welcome back to America Armed and Free, where we have the joy, the pleasure, and the honor of having with us Chris King. He's the plaintiff of the current lawsuit against Pima County on their illegal ordinance. And when I say illegal ordinance, I didn't say unconstitutional. Illegal means it violates state. It's in violation of state preemption law, violation of 1330-108D, where they have exceeded their authority because the state is the controlling legal authority. Chris has standing because he has had something stolen from him that was not reported within 48 hours, and so he is the plaintiff, and he's represented by the Scharf Norton Center for Constitutional Litigation up at Goldwater. And you have anything you'd like to say to the Pima County Board of Supervisors?
It would be a lot easier and save the taxpayers even more money if they went ahead and repealed this ordinance before it even had to go to court.
Mm-hmm. That would be nice. It would make it moot. Although this is another opportunity to kick them, kick them in the unmentionables one more time. Mm-hmm. This, by the way, they got kicked pretty. The city of Tucson got kicked pretty hard by the state Supreme Court in 2017 when they violated preemption and they violated the ordinance about destroying guns, and then Supreme Court ordered them, they had 30 days to change the ordinance or they would invoke Title 41, which is the provision that says if a county or a city or if a political subdivision doesn't obey the state law, that they can have all their state shared revenues removed, which would have taken in 2018 would have taken $116 million out of the city of Tucson's coffers, and it would have bankrupted the city of Tucson. And they then decided 4-3 to overturn their ordinance. And guess who one of the three was who voted not to overturn it?
My guess is she's probably the current mayor.
Yeah, that would be a correct guess. To quote Mr. Obama, the answer would be yes. And or as they say in Spanish, oy vey.
Exactly.
So you just, did you have to think very hard about this when Goldwater suggested that you be the plaintiff? Did you have to consider this very long and hard?
It really wasn't much of a consideration. The, you know, having been the victim of a crime, having had my home, the area of my home violated while I wasn't there, mm-hmm. right? Coming home to find that not only possessions, but livelihood had been stolen by an unknown individual who apparently still has yet to be found, right? Having a motor vehicle stolen at the exact same time, had my motorcycle stolen at the exact same time. In essence, of over $10,000 worth of resources stolen, to including gear, uniforms, a firearm, right? Things that I needed to perform my job and additional duties, as well as transportation, you know, well in excess of $10,000, and then turn around and having the potential to be re-victimized by the government, it was not hardly a blink of an eye before responded to Goldwater.
Got it. So did they ever get the motorcycle?
The motorcycle was returned, yes, eventually.
Hmm.
They found some of the materials. They didn't find all of them. As far as I know, they still have not recovered the firearm.
Hmm.
For about 7 or 8 years after the burglary and theft of materials, I was receiving annual updates from the City of Tucson Police Department saying, hey, we still haven't recovered it. And, you know, let us know. Hey, we still haven't recovered it. And I get this, you know, wonderful form letter saying, hey, we still haven't, your firearm still hasn't been recovered. Let us know if you come across it.
Yeah, right.
So, and it still has to this day yet to be recovered.
Yeah. In 2007, I had my car burglarized here at the radio station while I was on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And they stole 7 guns because I'd been teaching a class. I'd been out at the range, and I came into the station to broadcast, and the guns were in the car. I won't make that mistake again.
Exactly.
But, actually, what I did was I bought a steel vault, and I bolted the vault into the rearward facing door, and then I killed the automatic door lock going to the rear door, so you couldn't push the power door lock. You couldn't break the window, push the power door lock button. The tailgate still wouldn't open. The only way you could open the tailgate was with a key, and then facing the rear door, there was a padlock steel box, truck box. Like you put on an 18-wheeler underneath, I bolted one of those into the back of the vehicle. So it would have been very hard to take and very hard to break into.
You're definitely going to hear them doing something.
Well, in here with headphones on, I wouldn't hear a nuclear explosion outside likely. But the point of the matter is that or at least a hand grenade going off. But I don't own a hand grenade. But anyway, the thing is that I've gotten, over the years, of the 7 that were stolen, I've gotten 4 back.
Okay.
So, and TPD was the one that got all of them. The 3 that I really liked, that were of some value to me, those haven't come back.
Right.
So, but it's interesting. You know, what really bugs me, what really makes me wonder, and I want to get to AZCDL stuff in a minute, but what really makes me wonder is, let's say you report a gun stolen and you recover it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you lend it to somebody, didn't bring it back. You say, if I don't get this back, I'm going to report it stolen. Mm-hmm. So they don't give it back, and you report it stolen, right? And then let's say he gets pulled over at a traffic stop or something. They discover the firearm. They find out it's on the stolen registry. They give you the gun back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, does that gun get removed from the registry?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would guess that it would be reported through the police department and their internal tracking system, as well as, in a perfect world, be reported through the federal system.
You want to bet that Smith & Wesson 422 that I got back from TPD 2 years ago is still on the stolen list?
No, my guess would be a sucker bet, because the Smith & Wesson 9609 that I had stolen, nobody knows where it's at.
Right. But what I'm saying is if you did get it back, even if the police returned mm-hmm. it to you, my God, keep the receipt, keep the paperwork for that, mm-hmm. because if they ever say, well, that's a stolen gun. Yeah, it was, but I got it back. It was returned to the owner. Well, our records don't say that.
And that's why you always keep copies of all the paperwork of any interaction that you get with the law enforcement agencies.
The courts.
Exactly. As well as, you know, you keeping personal records of sales between, you know, say you sell a gun to a friend and neighbor, your child.
Right.
You always keep track of where that goes.
Yeah,
and that's just good business.
I have a log book at home with all the serial numbers and all the dispositions of them. And, you know, I look through that. That book gets kind of long over the years. So it's, you like something for a while and then you don't like it mm-hmm. and you sell it, or you find something you want more and you sell it and you get something else. And
you trade up?
Yeah, you trade up. Yeah. I did that. I traded in 3 guns and a little bit of cash. I got something I never even knew existed. It was the Model 69 Smith & Wesson. Mm-hmm. It's a 44 Magnum revolver, but it's 5-shot, not 6. So it's a smaller frame. It's not an N frame. It's an L frame gun, mm-hmm. but I'm sure somebody worked the trigger on it. I don't think it came out of Smith & Wesson, but the trigger's like butter.
Mm.
And I wanted a 44 mag for those occasional times when I go up to like northern Arizona and I'm out hiking in the woods and stuff like that. I'd like a 44.
Exactly.
So that's what I have it for. Mm-hmm. And I shot it once. Maybe twice in the last 4 years I've owned it, but there it is in my logbook, you know. So it's
I've got a few like that.
One of the stable. Mm-hmm. And do you own a 44 mag?
I do not. Oh. I own a 44. Was it? It's an old. It's a replica. It's a Uberti replica.
Oh, right. You don't have the replica of the. The 9-shot one, do you?
No.
What's the name of that 9-shot? If I hadn't tried to think of it, it would
exactly.
have come to me quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, but my wife got me that Uberti replica. You know, I was looking for a 45 Peacemaker, and she mm-hmm. got me a 45. A Colt 44 for.
Mm-hmm. Like a Walker, like a Colt Walker.
Something like
Is
that.
Is it muzzle loader?
No, it's not. It was a Civil War replica, so...
Of the Colt.
I'll see if I can pull it up.
All right. Yeah, we'll both be diving for the Internet at this point. 9-shot Civil War revolver, R-E-V-O-L-V-E-R. As soon as I see it, I'm going to go... It's a Lamat revolver. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of it. It's a 9-shot, 40 caliber 9-shot, and then there's a 20-gauge shotgun barrel underneath it. It's actually a 10-shooter.
Nice.
So, yeah, loaded on Sunday and shoot it all week. So
there you go.
Next, I want to talk about AZCDL. You're wearing an AZCDL T-shirt and a
sir?
Life member pin.
Yes, sir.
And how long have you been involved with the Arizona Citizens Defense League?
So my wife and I both became AZCDL members. I was originally an annual member, thanks to Duke Schechter. And then we were at a meeting, and my wife and I both said, you know what, let's just do this. So we both became life members.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it was a week before, and then she get the following week.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that because we see the writing on the wall, how the federal government, the state government, you know, not necessarily the state as a whole, but the, you know, the local municipalities here are always seeking to quote Arizona Constitution, impair the rights mm-hmm. of lawful gun owners and law-abiding citizens here. And the ordinance that Pima County passed does exactly that. It impairs the rights of law-abiding citizens.
Hmm. Yeah, we started this group in 2005,
mm-hmm.
so next year we'll be 20 years old,
mm-hmm.
and we being 3 other guys and myself, and... It was our idea to protect people's freedom. We put mm-hmm. that on the shirts. And it's amazing to me how that doesn't seem to be a value to some people who are the hired help in public office.
Exactly. And, you know, the interesting thing, too, you mentioned earlier talking about being a teacher, substitute teacher. And my wife and I are also Constitution coaches through the Patriot Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually discuss the Constitution a lot more than probably the average bear. But
in engaging with our students, engaging with, you know, students at, you know, the middle school and the high school level, when you ask them, what does the Constitution mean to you? They're like, nothing. It's a piece of old paper that's written by a bunch of old crusty white guys that doesn't matter anymore. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. What about the Bill of Rights? Well, those don't matter either. Okay, so let me give a phone. I asked the question. I said, do you have a cell phone? They're like, yeah. I said, well, give it here. Well, why? I said, well, you no longer have the right to free speech. What? I said, I assume you're sitting around friends, right? And they're like, yeah. Well, no, I want you to move. You go stand in the corner over here because you no longer have the right to association. So you have to make that, you have to make those connections and make it real to those students. And when you do that, they start like, it is an epiphany for them because they're like, wait a minute, these 248-year-old rules that were written by a bunch of crusty old white guys, you know, in Victorian, Victorian the Northeast. Times, yeah. Those matter today. The Constitution, they may say, is a living document. Yes, it is a living document. It needs to be read as it still applies today. Mm-hmm. And if you want to know what the Constitution means in that language, you can't go and apply today's meaning to it. You have to go back to their time. 1828, Noah Webster wrote the first American dictionary. And if you want to know what the Constitution means, you go to 1828. You read the words that Noah Webster put in that dictionary in 1828. You don't read Webster's Collegiate Dictionary or the Oxford English Dictionary from 2024. You go back to that time frame and you read what those words meant then. And then you apply that meaning to what our Constitution means today.
You know what word is not in the 1828 Noah Webster?
Fascism?
Woke.
Woke?
All right, stand by, and so we'll be back for the last segment with Chris King in just a little bit.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
I have a Chevy 283 with a Rochester 4-barrel carburetor.
I had a typo in there. I made it a 293. Boarded out 10 over, right on the radio.
Do that a couple more times for me.
We'll turn it into a 302 for you, nothing flat.
Five,
Swap Shop, three, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch. Imagine that this is your daughter.
What do you want?
Now you get to decide how this scene ends. Or...
Stop, Earl! Stop! Stop!
Some misinformed people want to take away your daughter's choice between rape and self-defense. We're pro-choice on self-defense. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, jpfo.org.
Kind of makes you want to go out and buy a Winchester lever action, doesn't it?
That and take a trip out to Old Tucson Studios.
Yeah, hey, how about that? Although, I haven't seen too many lever guns out there. I've seen a lot of six-shooters, but never any lever guns or double barrels. So, you know what's really interesting is, one of the things when you're doing some substitute teaching and teaching about being a constitutional coach is, how do you make the Constitution come alive to people?
A lot of times it's presentation, and a lot of times it's making it relevant to what we what we're experiencing today in modern times. People like to claim, this is tyranny, this is tyranny, this is tyranny, this is tyranny. But what is tyranny? So you ask the question. You have to ask the question. And when you compel your students to answer the questions, and you compel them to get in and do the research, and you don't allow them to use sources like Wikipedia or anything that's contained within the first 10 pages of Google. You know, you make them actually go and open a get this, a book, a real book, something physical, right? You make them go do an interview with somebody who's lived in an experience. I remember one of my first experiences as a substitute teacher. I was in the classroom on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And none of those students were alive that day. So everything that we were discussing was from a historical aspect, where at the time I was stationed here at Davis-Monthan and experiencing it firsthand. So I was the historical artifact at that point.
Stand very still. You're an artifact. It made me forget what I was going to say. I'll tell you. Oh, I know it. The first question I asked you when we met,
yes, sir,
was,
what is Article 2, Section 2 of the Arizona Constitution? Which you've, you know, as we were talking during the break, you've replaced with what is the stated purpose of government.
Right.
And at the time, I was still, you know, fairly new because I'd just been
on running for something, weren't you?
No, no, I was, I wasn't running for anything.
Oh, I thought you were.
No, okay. I was actually helping Anna Henderson. She was actually running for legislative district.
Right.
9 at the time?
At the time,
yeah. I think it was 9.
So.
Yeah. So, and she, you know, she's a great liberty-minded woman.
Yeah.
She is fabulous.
She really is.
So, and I learned a lot from her, you know. And
she's a delight.
Yes.
She absolutely is a delight. So is J.L.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got a nice bench of people that truly understand that government is servant, not master,
and, exactly,
which is the point of asking the question, mm-hmm, but... Have you noticed any more or less people that can actually answer the question about Article 2, Section 2, or the stated purpose of government?
Almost every candidate that I've ran into recently has not been able to answer that question. It's been even more so is when we talk about the Bill of Rights. They're like, I'm a huge supporter of the First, you know, the First Amendment. And I ask the question, follow up to that, which one? And because so the original First Amendment was never ratified,
right?
So
the first two,
correct. Well, the second one was ratified.
Second
one was ratified. It was the last one ratified in 1992, and that was the provide
the 27th Amendment.
Correct.
Yeah. Right. Go ahead. To provide.
Yeah, it was to provide salaries for our Congress critters.
Yeah.
So.
You know, so of the 12, 11 have been ratified. Which correct. One wasn't?
So the original first one was not ratified because that's set to apportionment at locked apportionment in at 30,000 voters. So that
oh,
one
per
was
district.
That, yes. So that oh. one was never ratified.
Well, it's a good thing they didn't because correct. What the current population our Congress would be, you know, over 1500 people.
Exactly.
And that's not tenable.
Mm-mm.
So I think it's smart not to have more than 435 members of Congress and mm-hmm. And 100 senators, assuming we have no more states.
Correct.
I kind of wish that you know, American Samoa had been granted statehood, and also one other property that we have that we've been granted statehood. It would just be interesting to have another Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Although, if you look at the way Hawaii is and votes, I'm not so sure. I'm glad it's a state, but I can't undo history.
Right.
Our 40.
But we can teach it, and and when we do teach history, we have to teach the good, the bad, and the ugly. Mm-hmm. So, because if we're not teaching history, all of history. You know, mm-hmm. we're not doing a service to our students, and we're not doing a service to each other as Americans, because we all have to realize that America does have some bad things in our history, but we are the most exceptional nation on the planet.
You know, another thing that you reminded me of in the hallway about our state, about the state seal. Talk mm-hmm. about that a minute.
So our state seal, the motto of the state of Arizona is Ditat Deus, which means God enriches.
God enriches, yeah.
So, and we have, you know, as a nation, we are founded on Judeo-Christian principles.
Mm-hmm.
So, and anybody who tries to push back on that saying that's not true, well, history doesn't side with you. History sides with, you know, Judeo-Christian principles brought in mm-hmm. from the pilgrims who came here in the 1600s. After spending 6 years with their pastor in Holland, learning how to create a nation after they escaped from England,
mm-hmm. yeah, from the mm-hmm. auspices of the Church of England,
exactly.
You know, and but I think I agree with you on one thing, and that is, it is important to teach the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Way to finish that up.
All right, enough of that. Sometimes I can't stay serious for
it's all right. As I say, I have a rubber chicken attached to my water bottle.
Yeah, that's a point. Yeah, is that for like? Is that a stress ball?
It's actually not. It's actually a little rubber chicken. It actually squeaks and everything else.
Oh,
but
it squeaks.
It could, yeah.
You know what? You should hold that up to the microphone and let it squeak. So. Okay. Yeah, I'm impressed. You see, I support its right to free speech.
It is. The right to free clucking.
Yeah, right. So. we could go somewhere with that, but we shouldn't.
But, it goes back to some principles of life that I have. One is you should never take life too seriously because you don't get out alive anyways. Human beings have a 100% chance of dying.
Yeah, you know, I recently read that during the Falklands War, I could be wrong on the name of the ship, I think it was HMS Hermes, and HMS Hermes was in the destroyer, and it there was a Falklands Island A-4, a reform American fighter plane, and it had a missile on it, an air-to-ground missile, and it shot the HMS Hermes, and the hull was too large to overcome it, and it began to fill with water. They called abandoned ship, and they didn't get all the lifeboats out. They got as many lifeboats as they could. Some of the people were in the water, and the Hermes capsized. And so the guys in the water climbed up on the hull of the Hermes, and it was still sitting there inverted when the rescuers came. When the rescuers came, they were kind of impressed. The whole crew of the HMS Hermes was standing arm in arm, linked arms, and they were singing "Always Look on the Bright Side of Life" when the guys came to rescue them from Monty Python. So, if they can, we can. So.
Exactly.
If Monty Python be for us, who can be against us? How do you keep your attitude up?
It's actually not as hard as you think. When you realize that we live in a fallen world, and if you're right, you know where you're going at the end of this life. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the ways I keep my attitude up. Also, I have a great wife, and she does amazing at putting up with me. You know, and all the silliness and craziness that I put up with, or that I create in our life. We've been together for over 20 years now, so
that's fantastic.
It's not always easy.
Yeah, that's as they say in Spanish, mazel tov. She like guns too.
Yes, it was actually there's an interesting story there.
Well, we got 8 seconds.
That's not an 8 second story.
Sorry. No,
we'll have to catch that up with another time.
There's a tease for next time because any second we're going to start hearing the Lee Greenwood, and that means we're towards the end. I guess I waited too long to ask. Yeah. Yes.
So which Lee Greenwood song? Okay. A little bit different from the one they play at the end of every exercise in Korea.
Okay. Is that one, thank God, I'm glad to be
here. God bless the USA.
Oh, God bless the USA.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the end of our time together. Appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Charles.
And I want to encourage everyone to be vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative, in liberty. I'm Charles Heller.
Take us by thy might, great God, our King.
AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson.